Christmas is the only time I know of in the long calendar of the year when men and women seem by one consent to open their shut-up hearts freely and to think of people below them as if they really were fellow passengers to the grave and not another race of creatures bound on other journeys. Charles Dickens, A Christmas Carol, December 1843. It was Sunday, December 17, 1933. A cold and drizzly day when B. Verdot's plan began to take shape. That evening, outside the First Presbyterian Church, beneath its soaring twin battlements, hundreds of families gathered. Parents took their children's hands and climbed the wide sandstone steps to enter the Gothic sanctuary. Here, at the center of this beleaguered city, the faithful had come for generations. President William McKinley himself had been married here. But on this night, they assembled to hear a reading of Charles Dickens's A Christmas Carol. It was a tradition of long standing, but during this bleak holiday season, it took on special meaning. Pressed shoulder to shoulder in the stiff-backed pews, they were drawn from every corner of the city. Church elders, men and women of privilege, jobless mill workers, tradesmen forced to sell their tools, bankrupted shop owners, widows trying to hold on to their children. At the front of the sanctuary was a creche with the baby Jesus, and around it, stunted pine trees festooned with tinsel and glistening ornaments. Festive greenery hung from the choir loft above. For many of these children, it was all the Christmas they would see. They listened as Dr. Delbert G. Lean, professor of oratory from nearby Worcester College, read of the miserly Ebenezer Scrooge, of the ghosts that tormented him, and of a gift that transformed one poor family's Christmas. Only one who had lived such a life, who had lost his home, seen his father tossed in debtor's prison, and been pressed into factory labor as a child, as Dickens had, could understand what such a tale might mean to these congregants. Malnourished parishioners must have salivated to hear the words, "There never was such a goose," and fought back tears as Tiny Tim proclaimed, "God bless us, everyone." They, too, hungered for someone to bless them with a Christmas dinner, to lift them, if only for a moment, out of their misery. Then, one by one, they shuffled past the Reverend James Wilson Bean, steeling themselves against a frigid night and, for many, an empty cupboard. The pastor, too, returned to his home, which, like many, had grown accustomed to the soft knock of the hobos and the homeless, hoping that a walk needed shoveling or a step mending in exchange for a sandwich and a cup of coffee. Some members of the church's board would have been glad to be rid of Bean. His outspoken sympathies for the poor were fine, but at that moment the church could ill afford to think of anything but its own survival. Bean's pay had been cut. The benevolences, as the fund for the needy was called, had been slashed. Church accounts had been frozen with the failure of the Dime Savings Bank in October 1931, forcing it to make do with the few dollars left in petty cash. Attendance was plummeting. Even among the stalwarts, some were losing faith in themselves, in one another, and in God. Christmas was a week away, but for many, it meant just another day to get through. For 4 years, Canton's 105,000 citizens had been battered by the Great Depression. Around town, parents were using strips of tires to extend the life of worn-out shoes. The Union Mission was bursting with the homeless, and scrawny children in patched coats were scavenging for coal along the B&O railroad tracks. Many of those lucky enough to still have homes had sold the furniture, beds and all, and huddled together on bare floors or sat on old orange crates. So it was around the country. And B. Verdot saw it all. Newspapers, selling for 3 cents a copy, were shared, family to family, and read by kerosene lamp. For many, electricity was a luxury as remote as a ride on the bus or a visit to the doctor. Children went to school on empty stomachs. Many would not learn the meaning of the word breakfast until years later. In back alleys, dogs and cats were left to fend for themselves and could be seen pawing through refuse for scraps. Thousands of Canton's depositors were shocked to discover their banks padlocked, their savings gone. Mothers and fathers did what they could to hide their despair from the children and from each other. All the while, the asylum, the county poorhouse, the city orphanage, and the reformatory swelled with the casualties of the hard times. It was a landscape Dickens would have recognized.